Well, on your outline today, we're talking about Native Americans and gambling. Native Americans in the United States number 4.3 million. That's 1.5% of the U.S. population. There are 310 Indian reservations in the United States comprising 55.7 million acres, and that takes up 2.3% of the U.S. land area. And I have a map here of Indian reservations in the United States. They are scattered all over the nation, and these little tiny things that you can't see because they're so small here, those are, you know, just very little reservations in Oklahoma or here in Mississippi. There are even some out in some of the eastern states, a number up in Minnesota, North and South Dakota, but huge amounts of area in what state? Arizona, yeah. And 310 Indian reservations. And here's the map of Arizona showing Navajo Nation, Hopi Nation, other Indian reservations in Arizona. Probably that previous map in color shows quite a bit more of that. They are managed by the Department of the Interior, and under the Department of the Interior, something called the Bureau of Indian Affairs. They are set up in a unique way because Native American tribes have a degree of national sovereignty. And so they have their own laws and their own legal system, including their own courts. And the history of that is a long and complex history. Everybody recognizes that there are problems with the reservation system and with the situation of American Indians in the United States. I once had opportunity to talk in private conversation with Don Hodell. Don Hodell was at one time Secretary of Energy for Ronald Reagan, and he was also at another time Secretary of the Interior. So when talking to him, I said, well, you were Secretary of the Interior. That means you had charge of the American Indian system. He said, yes, that's right. And I said, well, were you able to do anything to help the problems there? And he said, many, many people have tried, and nobody seems able to have solved the problem and done very much. But I'm going to suggest some things this morning that I think would really help the problems. What are the problems? I think any impartial observer looking at the system of American Indians today and the reservation system would conclude that it is a broken, failed system that traps most Native Americans in perpetual poverty and in a large measure of alienation from the rest of American society. A few Native American leaders derive vast wealth from gambling casinos, but 32% of Native Americans still live below the poverty line. This is in spite of massive amounts of infusions of U.S. Dollars from the government. There are a few jobs, unemployment time 2.5 times the national average. Now, last week I was in Seattle and Spokane speaking to two different pastors' groups, encouraging them to promote Christian influence on government for good. And we got in question and answer time, one of the pastors said, well, what would you say to me where I'm in an area ministering to people where there's an 80% unemployment rate? This was a pastor at the meeting I was speaking at in Spokane. And I, just without hesitating a moment, I said, are you in an Indian reservation? He said, yes. 80% unemployment rate. But I knew, as soon as he asked the question, I knew that's not normal. That's not a normal part of the United States, even with our difficult economic situation now. This is a very, very tragic situation. In addition to the unemployment rate that's exceptionally high, levels of alcoholism and drug abuse are tragic, many times the national average. Alcoholism death rates 7 times the national average in the United States. And education levels are tragically low. Only 54% of Native Americans graduate from high school. That's half don't graduate from high school. Fourth grade math, 20% of American Indians and Alaskan Natives scored at or above proficiency in fourth grade math. So, a very difficult situation. Is there any solution? In my own mind, the most necessary change, without which there is never going to be any genuine reform, is to enable private ownership of individual parcels of land on the Indian reservations. Private ownership of land. Because now the system is such that land is held in tribal ownership, and it's managed under the broad oversight of the Bureau of Indian Affairs, but it means that you can't own a piece of property. You can't buy or sell it. You can't develop it. And because of that, the whole Indian population is trapped in poverty. Why is that? Because when you don't have private ownership of property, no person has incentive to improve the land or develop economic benefit from it. And what Barry Asmus and I have learned in our study of the economic history of the world and economic development is that one of the most important factors in enabling economic growth among various nations in the world is enabling individuals to be able to obtain clearly documented private ownership of property. I've talked about this before. But I have a kind of a review of that on your outline under 5B. Peruvian economist Hernando de Soto, in a book called The Mystery of Capital, a book I've talked about before, looks at various poor nations of the world, and he says, in various ways, people are unable to own private property, and when they can't own property, the nation is trapped in poverty forever. Now, communism did this by the government owning all the property. So Russia, North Korea, Cuba, China is a little bit of an exception because they've given some limited property rights in the last 20 or 30 years and they've grown economically. But pure communism means nobody owns any private property. Karl Marx said the theory of the communists may be summed up in a single sentence, abolition of private property. And when private property is abolished, then you get Russia, you get Cuba, you get North Korea, some of the poorest countries of the world, people trapped in poverty. Another way that private property is prohibited effectively is in some Latin American countries where you get a very few extremely wealthy families, and they get in cahoots with the government, and the government puts in so many rules, and De Soto noticed this in Peru, for instance, where he lives. The government puts in so many rules that it takes 893 steps in 200 different government offices before you can ever get title to a land or to build a house or to license a business with even one employee. And so people are essentially locked out of ownership of land. But another tragic way that people are prevented from owning land is tribal ownership. And you get this in many African societies where you can't buy or sell a piece of land because your uncle, your cousin, your nephew, somebody else thinks that he has a share in it too, and you get 20 or 30 people all thinking they have a right to decide and they want the proceeds from the land and it can never be sold because it belongs to the tribe. It is without doubt and without exception true that every single nation that has a system of tribal ownership rather than private ownership of land remains trapped in poverty forever. And that's the case with American Indians. De Soto argues that the way nations grow is that you get a little piece of land. John Wiederquist sitting in the front row, so I'm going to use him as an example again. John and Sandy get a little piece of land. They build a house on it. And the house starts to increase in value. And then John says, I want to start a business. You know what? We've got some equity in this house. We'll take out a second mortgage, and then we'll get some money to start a little business. And they start a little business, and the business grows. But in order to do that, he had to have some land so that he had some value to borrow money against to start a business. In addition to that, when you own land, you have an address. And if you have an address, then the bank is willing to loan you money because they know where they can find you. But if you don't have land, you don't have a permanent address, you're a much higher credit risk. And if you have an address and you own land, you can get something else in one of these poor countries. You can get electricity. Because the electric company says, we know that you'll pay your bills because we know that you own that land. And you can get water and you can get telephone service and internet connection. So all of a sudden, ownership of land is really important to businesses developing and growing in a nation. That is consistent with the Bible's teaching on private property. So under 5b1, the Bible regularly assumes and reinforces a system in which private property belongs to individuals, not to the government or to society as a whole. Exodus 20:15 in the Ten Commandments, you shall not steal. That assumes that there's something to steal. That assumes that you own something that doesn't belong. You own a car, you own a computer, you own a donkey or an ox in the ancient world. And I'm not supposed to steal it because it belongs to you. It doesn't belong to me. The commandment you shall not steal assumes private ownership of property. And in the explanation, you shall not covet your neighbor's house or his ox or his donkey. It assumes that your neighbor owns those things. And then Deuteronomy 19:14, you shall not move your neighbor's landmark, which the men of old have set. The landmark is what marked the boundary between my property and John Wiederquist's property. And he's my neighbor. So, if this is the boundary, the landmark, a big rock or something, between my property and the Wiederquist property, and at 3 a.m, I sneak out one night and I go and say, move the boundary, move the landmark. All of a sudden, I've got another 3 feet of land that belongs to me and not to John. I stole it. That's why the command is, you shall not move your neighbor's landmark, which the men of old have set. That's stealing, and that assumes private property. Leviticus 25:10, in the Jubilee year, each of you shall return to his property. And in Acts 4, Peter said to Ananias when he sold this land, well, it remained unsold, did it not remain your own? And after it was sold, was it not at your disposal? Why is it that you have contrived this deed in your heart? So he reaffirmed to Ananias the property was his. Even though there was great sharing and generosity in Acts 4 in the early church, yet there was private ownership of property that remained. And there are many punishments for stealing and laws for how you handle damage if you let a fire break out and it spreads to your neighbor's land and things like that. So I'm going to skip down to point 5 for the sake of time. On the human government level, property is regularly said to belong to individuals, not to the government, society, or the nation as a whole. And there's an evil that is seen and predicted in Samuel, 1 Samuel 8, about the king who gets too much power, and he will take, and he will take, and he will take. And so, what does that mean in terms of coming back to Native Americans or American Indians? Here's where I want to show you what it means. Oh, there's Arizona again. Okay. Here is the difference between tribal ownership and private ownership of property. This is the 101 going south through Scottsdale. And Scottsdale Bible Church is maybe over here someplace. Because I think this is around Indian Bend. I'm not. But anyway, this is Scottsdale, and this is Scottsdale, and this is Indian Reservation. This property, now I don't know what's happened in the last couple of years with property prices, but I know what Scottsdale property cost when the church was thinking of getting land to build another sanctuary at one point because of space considerations. This is 5-6 years ago. It was $1 million an acre. And somebody in here who knows property values, is this property in Scottsdale still $1 million an acre off to the west of the 101? $500,000? $500,000 an acre? Okay, $500,000 an acre. It's some of the most expensive residential and commercial property anywhere in the United States. What's the economic value being derived from this piece of empty dirt? Yeah, just about zero. I mean, there's a little cotton growing on it in some of it. And if you drive through, you drive east of the 101 into the Indian Reservation, it's broken down cars, broken down houses, and abject poverty. That's what you see. Living in the midst of one of the most wealthy communities in the United States, that's tribal ownership versus private property. It traps people in poverty forever. And every time you drive up and down the 101, you look off to the east, and you see this land that is certainly not getting the return that $500,000 an acre land would get. Solution. Seems to me the most necessary change is to allow private ownership of individual parcels of land on Indian reservations. Now, how could you do that? I think it would mean you, just like the tribes of Israel did, they divided up the land to start out their settlement in the land of Israel, in the land of Palestine. I think it would mean you divide up the land to parcels given to individual families, but they own it and they can sell it to anybody. They can sell it to another Native American if they wish, or they can sell it to you or me if they wish. They can sell it to a developer if they wish. They have the ability to own and buy and sell their own land because it's privately owned. And the tribes would have to decide how they would divide it up and who would get what sections, but it would be divided up so that all of a sudden we've got private ownership of land. Would that mean the end of the Indian reservations in the United States? Yes. Over time, it would mean the end of Indian reservations. Of course, they could set aside some little tracts of land, a few acres, to commemorate and preserve cultural traditions. I would have no objection to that. But overall, this large amount of area that is over 2% of the land in the United States would become private property. What would happen is that then the people in those Indian reservations would be able to integrate into American society. Rather than being isolated from it, they would all of a sudden be able to share in the economic development and economic wealth of the United States. Not in terms of charity, but in terms of earned success by developing and owning their own land. Now, when I say that, someone will say, wait a minute, this is contrary to our tribal traditions. Our tribal traditions are tribal ownership of land, not private ownership. And my response is that these tribal traditions are contrary to the teaching of the Word of God on the need for private property and private ownership of property. That's the system that God has established. And these tribal traditions are trapping these Indians, Native Americans, tribes in poverty for generation after generation. So the Bible does say something about tradition. Why do you break the commandment of God? For the sake of your tradition. For the sake of your tradition, you have made void the word of God. This is Matthew 15:3 and Matthew 15:6. Jesus said to the Jewish leaders, you have a fine way of rejecting the commandment of God in order to establish your tradition, Mark 7:9. And Paul says in Colossians 2:8, see to it that no one takes you captive by philosophy and empty deceit, according to human tradition, according to the elemental spirits of the world, and not according to Christ. So step number one, allocate the Indian land to private ownership of American Indians, and then let them buy and sell as they please. Step number two, another reform point G on your outline, the tribal court system must be placed under the jurisdiction of the state it is part of. Some of that has happened on some reservations, but I think there has to be an overall provision so that decisions in the tribal courts could be appealed to the appellate courts in the states in which the tribe, reservation exists. Right now, business investors many times decide not to invest in businesses on tribal lands because they have no assurance that contracts will be enforced fairly by the tribal court system. And many people that I've talked to decide that they will not drive through tribal lands for fear they might get in an accident and fail to receive justice from the tribal courts beyond which there is no appeal. So Terry Anderson, writing in the Wall Street Journal in 2009, he's a researcher with expertise in law and economics. He writes, "A stable judicial system is crucial for investments, and tribal courts have not provided this." So, again, the question is, are traditions more important or the good of the Native American people more important? Government should be God's servant for your good, Romans 13:4. Government should not be a terror to good conduct, but to bad. So that is the end of what I want to say about American Indians or Native Americans. And I know many of you live here in Arizona, and you probably have viewpoints about that. But that's before I go on to the next topic, I just want to see if you want to interact on that or give me some feedback or pushback on it. What's your name? Sandy? Yeah. Where's the microphone here? Come now.
Do all the Native Americans live on the reservation?
No.
What?
Some have moved off of the reservations and basically integrated into the social economic system of the United States.
Because I think I read somewhere in the paper that like Fort McDowell.
Yep.
There's like 900 families.
Yep.
On that reservation, and that's
I don't
all.
Know. I don't know the statistics. Yeah. Some have moved off the reservations into the non-reservation parts of the United States. What ownership rights or financial benefits they receive from still being Native Americans, I don't know. Yeah. Probably some of you know a lot more about this than I do. Who else? Do you have a question? Yeah. No? Yeah. Okay, Mike.
Just a thought, Wayne, maybe integrating into the thinking, and you didn't mention it a lot here, is most of the treaty arrangements with most of the Native tribes have the U.S. government paying for medical care. So basically you've got a fully socialized medical care system across most of the tribes. Again, if you want to have a vision for what medical care, if it's under a completely government socialized system, you can look to the medical care of the reservations. But again, any solution to changes in the reservations and the economies there, yeah, will have to deal with the fact that the government has set up these socialized systems to completely care and, yeah, provide for all of these other needs like, yeah, like medicine.
Yeah. So very interesting. So it's more difficult. It's more complex and difficult situation than even I had imagined. Yeah. Okay. Lisa. Hold on just a second.
Oh, just one other interesting comment is that I know on the Chandler border a while back when I was a reporter working over there, they have a lot of problems with chop shops and stuff being just over the border. So people would steal cars and commit other crimes and then run across onto the reservation. And then the Chandler police have no jurisdiction to go over there,
wow,
to capture anybody or to do anything over,
wow,
there. So there's a lot of crimes committed, and people know that they can get away with,
wow,
things by
okay,
doing that. And that was like a decade ago. I'm not sure if they've changed anything,
wow,
or if they've got any jurisdiction now, but I know there are a lot of issues with that.
Because of the reservation status as a quasi-independent nation, so there's more immunity from police pursuit than there would be even if you flee to another state. It's like fleeing to another country. Yeah, Mike?
It's not just private property either. Many of the tribes around the country take the view that they have total control of their children. When children are born for adoption purposes, they're moving into states and passing state laws that are more restricted than federal law on what can happen with adoption of Native American children. And the tribes are very aggressive with some of those things, not as much in Arizona, but in other states. And for example, in certain situations, a state court has no jurisdiction over a Native American child. and only the tribe does.
Wow.
In fact, I'm involved in one of those cases right now. So it's a real conundrum because and the other thing that's going on is tribes that have casinos are cutting off membership in their tribes because they want to limit the ones that are members now get more money if they don't let more members in. And the tribe controls who can be a member, so they can change the criteria for membership.
Wow. And, Mike, am I correct in saying that in case of an auto accident or a business dispute, the tribal court system, if it's within a reservation, the tribal court system is the final appeal?
I believe that's true. Now, some of the tribal courts, like the Navajo Nation, has a full court system with courts of appeals.
But it can't be appealed to the state of Arizona Supreme Court outside of that.
I don't believe so.
I don't think so either.
I'm not an expert on that part, but I don't believe so.
Good. Okay. Way in the back, Vic, and then I forgot your name. Lisa. It is Lisa. Yeah, I got two Lisas. Okay.
Interstates and the roads that go through the Indian reservations. US 60 goes through the Apache Indian Reservation between Globe and Safford. Who has legal jurisdiction on those roads?
I think the tribe does, but somebody help me there. Do you know? Anybody know? I think the tribe does because I've heard of these stories of people having auto accidents, and they have to work within the tribal court system, and there's a perception, at least, that they've been biased courts in the past. At least you run the risk. Roll the dice. Okay, Lisa, up here. Yeah.
I understand everything that you're saying, but I'm just wondering, don't you think that there'd be a heck of a lot of resistance from the Native Americans if they had private ownership? Because once they own their own homes and own their own land, then certainly they would be vulnerable, in a sense, to developers who would be willing to pay top price. And, you know, once all those Native Americans would sell, then they'd, in a sense, kind of be so integrated that they'd kind of lose their sense of...
If we had private ownership of property here on this area of the land adjacent to Scottsdale, this side of the 101, the east side, would soon look like this side, the west side of the 101. I know it would. But when you've got 2% of the land area of the United States, there's a lot that wouldn't. I mean, there's vast amounts of territory that would be turned to farmland, or they would be left as natural land if people wanted to leave it that way. But it would look like the rest of the United States in various ways. Yep. Roy's wife, Cleora.
You may get into the answer of this question later, but I have always wondered, you know, in Las Vegas, the gambling has people that oversee it, and they are required to have a certain amount of payoff. I've always wondered if the Indians, if anybody oversees the gambling that the Indians do, if they're required to pay a certain amount.
Don't know.
Okay.
There's a whole bunch that I don't know about this. Okay. Some more up here. Is it John? Oops.
Since they have, Indians have freedom to move off the reservation, haven't the individuals who have moved off and the individuals who have stayed already chosen between capitalism and Marxism?
Yes. I guess that's one way of looking at it. But not very many do, because so much of your life is taken care of by a socialized system.
They're not clamoring. It doesn't seem like they're clamoring for capitalism on the reservations.
No, but the question is, do people understand why they're in poverty or not? I don't think very many people understand what I've said this morning. That the key to moving out of poverty is private ownership. Yeah.
To have your dream come true, who would have control, the government or the tribal areas, to say you have to sell your property or give your property to the different groups, Indian groups? So how could this come about?
The tribes would have to say, you get this 2 acres, and you get this 2 acres, and you get this 2 acres. Do with it whatever you want to. But all of a sudden, it's part of the rest of the United States. It's not an Indian reservation anymore. The tribes would allocate it at the beginning, but then all of a sudden the tribes don't have control anymore because John Wiederquist owns this or Alan owns this or whoever. So, okay, I think I'm done. Oops, Julie. That microphone is not helping us.
I don't know if this is true everywhere, but my mother grew up in Montana where there's a lot of Indian reservations, and there's a financial incentive for staying on the reservation.
Oh, sure.
You're paid more money as an Indian if you live on the reservation.
Okay.
And you are paid as long as you can. Once you move off the Indian reservation, you're paid a lesser amount.
Uh-huh.
But you're paid as long as you can prove 1/32nd of descendant from that particular tribe.
Wow.
And I'm not sure if that's true all over. I'm not even sure if it's true now, but there is an incentive for remaining.
Okay.
You get more money to stay on the reservation.
Okay. I'm going to go to a related issue, gambling. In approximate terms, gambling accounts for 0.5% to 1% of the U.S. economy. 92 billion dollars spent in 2007. Now, supporters of gambling say, "Well, this is a freedom issue. It allows freedom to enjoy the entertainment value of going to a casino or gambling." And they say, "Look, you know, everybody participates, don't they, in informal gambling, like a raffle that a church might have or a local school might have to raise money for a charity. You buy a ticket and you get a drawing from the ticket." And, you know, these casinos provide jobs and tax revenue, and the money goes to the educational system. What's the objection? But there are serious objections against commercial gambling. Number one, it's socially harmful. It's socially harmful because the largest number of gamblers come from the poorest elements of the population who make unwise decisions and trap themselves deeper and deeper in debt. This is both true for casinos and for lottery tickets. And the existence of gambling businesses in states leads to gambling addiction, and this addiction destroys marriages, destroys families, destroys hope for career advancement, and it leads to societal breakdown. Third, studies show that where gambling businesses flourish, crime rates increase. And number four, though it provides tax revenue, that tax, you know, that revenue comes as like a hidden tax on the poorest part of the population who can least afford to pay. So it's a socially undesirable way of raising tax revenue. And then fifth, there's this huge problem that I mentioned in number two, but I want to reemphasize the huge problem of gambling addiction for some people, and that it ruins lives, families, and ultimately I think it's a demonic bondage that leads to a massively destructive influence. And, you know, there have been some times when late at night I'd be driving north on the 101, driving home from some meeting where I was, and I look off to the right and I see these parking lots of these casinos just jammed with cars, and I'm thinking, oh my goodness, is people gambling away money that they really can't afford to lose? It's a socially destructive activity. Every state permits gambling now except Hawaii and Utah. Lotteries are very, very common, and they're tempting for states to adopt because, we'll give you money for your education program or something like that. But the advertising is always buy a ticket and you'll be rich for the rest of your life, and somebody who buys the ticket is, you know, somebody who wins is shown getting all this money and happy and everything. But the advertising is highly misleading because the odds of winning are minute. And the people that can least afford to lose this money spend it again and again on the lotteries. A Christian approach. I don't know any specific Bible verses that prohibit gambling altogether. But I think that churches should teach that it's an unwise use of money, especially if people place hope in economic advancement through gambling winnings, through the lottery, or through going to the casino, rather than through developing job skills and working hard and saving money. Hope in getting rich through the lottery is foolish, and it's a way to economic loss and not gain, and so it's harmful to people. And the danger of addiction is very serious. And large commercial gambling outlets bring much more harm than benefit to a society. So it seems to me like this is a judgment call based on observations of the consequence. I can't find a clear biblical teaching that would prohibit this altogether. And so if you participate in an office pool to bet on a sports event or on a golfing game or something like that, I think it's unwise, but sometimes you might think that the social benefit of just being part of what everybody else is doing is worth it, or you might participate in a raffle because you know it's a donation to the charity that you're giving to and something like that. So I'm not going to say that that's always wrong, but I think that the predictable consequences are you'll lose your money, and be careful of setting an example that others will imitate and perhaps be led away by. And so the consequences are so harmful that I think an argument can be made that at least participating in some kinds of commercial gambling is morally wrong. That's a kind of a mixed evaluation, but I want to be faithful to Scripture, and I'm not sure I can absolutely find a reason for saying this is always wrong. I'm just saying it's very unwise and very destructive. Help me out on this. Now I've got 10 more minutes that we can talk. I didn't need Jack. I had two short topics, big topics, but okay, Joyce. Joyce is going to just hold on a second. The microphone is coming.
I just wondered how much research you did into the Native American schools and the quality.
Native American schools and quality, Joyce, I really didn't. I just got cumulative statistics. Do you know anything more about that, Wanda?
I counseled a Native American teacher, and she became extremely frustrated because she was teaching on the reservation with the lack of support and trying to innovate and increase the opportunities for the kids. She said they just have no incentive because they're going to get money anyway.
They're going to get money anyway.
Yeah, so they don't have any incentive.
So all of a sudden, why get job skills? Because you're going to get payments from the government that will support you for the rest of your life. So there's a negative incentive at gaining job skills, but you end up in poverty that way. And people don't have what I talked about, this Arthur Brooks book, The Battle, where much research shows that what makes people happy is not money. It's earned success. It's having a job and doing well at it. Whether it's keeping French fries hot at Wendy's or whether it's growing a business, having a job and doing well at it is earned success. That's what gives people happiness. And just government payouts for Indians is not going to help. Okay. What else? Okay, Ken. Thank you all for wearing your name tags.
Recently, I met with a guy that was a missionary, and he did some work in Africa, and one of the, not a volunteer, but a day laborer, fell off a ladder, broke his arm. They took him to the village, and the guy there set his arm. So the missionaries got together, and they said, look, we want to help this guy out. We want to feed him while he's recovering. And the people in the village said, oh, you can't do that, because if we do that, we're going to teach people that you can make money by getting hurt, or you can make money by not working, and we don't want that to start. So they would not let the missionaries like bring food and do things like that. It was kind of an interesting.
Was the guy able to work?
No, he had broken his arm. He wasn't able to work.
My goodness.
So I mean, his family did take care of him for a while, but I thought that was an interesting aspect of African
in this particular village.
Anyway. Okay. But the other thing I wanted to ask is this also, this tribal situation, also true in Hawaii? Because Native Hawaiians tend to have the same difficulties.
I think there was an election issue in the 2008 or 2010 election about giving some tribal status to Native Hawaiians, and I don't know if it passed or not. I think it didn't. I think it would have caused all sorts of would have repeated the problems that we have on Native American reservations here in the United States. I hope it didn't pass. I don't know. Okay. Yep. Let's see. Roger and Joyce. It is Joyce.
Yes. I'm sorry. I forgot my name tag.
All right.
I just wanted to say you mentioned the 101, and a lot of people don't like to travel on the Indian reservation.
Yep.
It's been a while since I was involved, but back when that was built, and I'm sure it didn't change because they really don't believe in selling the land.
Yep.
that a lot of that 101 segment is on the reservation.
I know
as
it
is Pima. So at the time, if an accident happened on Pima, it decided on which side of the road you were on because some of it was on the Indian reservation, and going the other way, you were actually the city.
I think the 101 is on a long-term lease.
I think so, but you're still on the Indian reservation.
Yeah, but I think that state highway has jurisdiction. I don't know. Mike, do you know?
I think
that the state has jurisdiction.
And a lot of those stores down there on Indian Bend, they're on the reservation.
I know. The Promenade Shop or the Pavilion Shopping Center is leased land. Margaret, Joyce has some question here. Joyce Grace.
When you spoke of how you could possibly implement this thing of private ownership,
yeah.
Well, what if the tribes agreed or, you know, made a contract or whatever legal thing they had to do to keep the property within, that you could only sell within the tribe? Then they could, you know, they could keep the land within the tribe, but they would still develop the principle of private ownership.
Yeah. But basically then you isolate the property from this economy here in Scottsdale, which is where the wealth is. If you have to keep it within the tribe, you don't have much land value here because the people who are already living on the tribe don't want to live there. So I think it has to be open to the national economy and the national judicial system. You don't think so, Joyce? They don't have any incentive to do it. Yeah, I know. So it's a wishful thinking. But I'm saying somebody's got to come out and say, get rid of the reservations. And I'm saying it. I'm not sure anybody believes me. But I'm also saying to the tribal leaders, and if any are listening who are tribal leaders, God has put you in a position of authority to do good for your people. Face it. If you keep the system of tribal ownership of land, you will trap American Indians in poverty forever. Is that what you want? Poverty and a cycle of dependence and alcoholism and unemployment and low educational achievement, everything that goes with it. Do you want that? Is that good for your people? That's the question. Now, whether anybody will, it will take heroic leaders among Native Americans to make a change. I can't make that change. Todd?
You know, is it possible you could make that, I mean, this is thinking outside the box maybe, but make it a separate county, separate city? They have their own tax. I mean, just like Scottsdale has its own taxes,
yep.
But it is, you know, free to buy and sell from whoever.
Could be easily. That's a great idea. It could be a separate county. So there's some independence there, but Maricopa County is still subject to the jurisdiction of the state of Arizona, and you still buy and sell within Maricopa. Anybody can buy and sell within Maricopa County. So sure. Yeah. So you got some sense of independence there. Good. What else? Anybody else on gambling? Anybody want to talk about gambling? Nobody wants to talk about gambling? Okay, John.
My question to you is, a lot of the reservation lands are marginal land where nobody wants to be there anyway.
Yep.
So how do you resolve that when you give it to the Indians and it's in the middle of...
Yeah, but John, yeah, some of it is. Okay, so then it just stays that way. But look, this land where some of you live looked like this land 50 years ago. See, and where we're sitting in Scottsdale Bible Church looked like this 50 or 60 years ago. Some of you remember when it looked like this. So there's water nearby, there's electricity nearby. All you need in Arizona, you need water and you need air conditioning. And everything takes off. So I think it would develop. Some of it wouldn't, I know. Some of it's way out in the wilderness. So, okay, and it doesn't have as much of value, but it has value according to what it is. Yeah, one more. Mike?
Wayne, you mentioned large commercial gambling outlets bring more harm than benefit.
I think.
I would agree. I mean, just my gut feeling is I would agree with that. Full disclosure, I'm not a gambler. But I think about even here in Arizona with the number of Indian casinos there are, and most especially in a place like Las Vegas, how many jobs it must bring to the community, as well as, I imagine, I don't know this for sure, that just to maintain good public relations, the casinos and large gambling institutions probably do donate some money to charities in the local area for good public relations. And can, is there any way you can expand on that or or kind of illuminate that part of what you said?
Well, it's a good question. I think my response is there are always other jobs eventually. And the reason is that we started on this with Barry a few weeks ago, and I've been thinking about it more. Human beings have limited needs, food, clothing, shelter. But we have unlimited wants. And so I started to make a list, but there are a lot of jobs that nobody knew existed 50 years ago or 100 years ago. 50 years ago, I didn't know that I wanted a cell phone that looks like this and that I can get email on because they didn't even exist. But all of a sudden, people invented them, and then people say, I want one of those. So the more human, as long as human beings are on the earth, we keep developing new things and inventing new things, and then people want new things. We didn't know we wanted sunglasses that change color, you know, with the sun that goes in and out when it gets out in the sun and it gets darker. We didn't. Did you know that cat litter didn't exist before 1950? And all of a sudden, somebody realized, because cats always lived outside. Then somebody realized, you know, if you got cat litter, you could have cats live indoors. And cat litter is a $1 billion industry today because we have unlimited wants. We have limited needs, but unlimited wants. So that if the casinos go out of business, there will always be other jobs of information system tech manager, or I need to make a list of 50 things that people didn't know existed 50 years ago, but they're all new industries that have sprung up because we keep inventing new things, and then people say, I want that, and then that all of a sudden creates a growth to the economy. There will always be other jobs. Lisa, I think this is, we're going to have one or two more, and then we're going to have to quit.
Okay, just one more comment about this. The gambling has actually helped the people on the Indian reservations. A decade back, we did a series of stories on the Indians in Chandler, and they used the money. They divvied up some of the money so a lot of people could build homes.
Yep.
They put in an infrastructure, fire departments,
yep,
fire engines. They built like a kidney dialysis center and a health center,
yep,
on the reservation. So there actually have been some benefits of the money that they've gotten from,
okay,
gambling on some of the reservations.
Okay, so it isn't all harmful. There's some benefit. So let me just let that comment stand, Lisa. Thanks. Yep. Okay, Glenn. Wait a second. Okay, here we go. Go ahead, Glenn.
I said, don't forget the $100 million they invested in a new spring training for the Rockies and Diamondbacks. It was $100 million on Indian reservation.
Of Indian money that went into the new spring training facility. Okay, so not all harmful, but I still think the system of, but who has control of most of that wealth? It's a few tribal leaders that get immensely wealthy, and most of the people are in a cycle of dependence and unemployment, and lack of property. Margaret, last comment.
Well, I think that gambling is really destructive. Mm. And I just think it hurts more people than it helps. And you've got people who go bankrupt. You've got people who steal. It's just, it's not good. And I don't think, like, I was in Las Vegas with some friends a couple years ago, and I didn't find, I mean, the lights were on, and there was a lot of glamour, but you could just feel the spiritual oppression.
Mm.
So I don't think it's good.
Okay. Thanks, Margaret. I what you're saying is, if I were to develop this more, there could be a lot more information about the huge destructive consequences of gambling addiction, which tears apart people's lives and destroys marriages and destroys families. And I don't want to neglect that. I think that's really crucial to say. All right. Lord Jesus, we thank you. Thank you for this time to think about some very difficult, very unhappy situations in our society. And we do ask, Lord, that you who are the sovereign Lord and rule over the nations, that you would bring your good influence to bear even among the Native Americans who live on these reservations. And Lord, we know that a number of them know you and have trusted in you as Lord and Savior. And we ask that you would bring those people who trust you and love you and believe your word to positions of prominence and influence, and that there would be some way that this system of tribal ownership of land could be dismantled and private ownership could be instituted to free these people whom you have created and who are men and women in your image, to bring them out of the cycle of poverty and unemployment and dependence that they have been trapped in for so long. Lord, we pray for a solution and that this wouldn't just go on forever and ever with no change. And we also pray, Lord, that you would somehow intervene in the laws of this state and other states to push back the evil influences that come in with excesses of the gambling industry, and that in your sovereignty and your providence, you would teach people to be good stewards of their money, for you say it is required of stewards that they be found faithful. So we commit these things into your hands. Thank you for the opportunity to think and talk about them together. Amen. See you next week.